Don't forget your sweetheart this Valentine's Day. Get great deals at HowieCarshow.com and click on store. We have books, t-shirts, and many great restaurant certificates too. And even gift cards to the Howie Car Show store if you don't know what to buy.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
So we'll ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Grace! Hey, welcome back, folks. I'm missing Grace today, too. I love Grace. She does a great job. This is Mike Crawford filling in for Grace on Friday. We've also got another great guest on the phone. We're going to switch it up and talk about Sandra Birchmore. For people who aren't aware, Sandra Birchmore was allegedly murdered by a police officer named Matthew Farwell, who is up on federal charges right now. We're going to speak to one of her big advocates for Sandra Birchmore. Her name is Mizzy. She was recently in federal court when Matthew Farwell had his most recent court hearing, which he finally appeared for. He hadn't appeared at a court hearing since the indictment. So welcome to the show, Mizzy. And I want to ask you about that court hearing. You were there with Matthew Farwell. How did that go? What were your impressions from the court hearing, seeing Matthew Farwell in person?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me. It was his first time in court that we've seen him. Sandra's family finally got to see this man in court. And he's very tall. And you look at him and you just imagine Sandra standing next to him because she was only 4'10". And she was so tiny compared to how he is. It was surreal. It was, but it was good to finally see him in court for the first time.
Wow, I didn't realize she was that small, 4'10". Wow, she's a very tiny woman. How big do you think he is? Like, is he over 6 foot? Is he? What do you think?
I believe he's 6'4".
Wow,
6'4". I mean, there's such a big height difference between them.
Yeah, it's a big disparity.
Yeah. She was like a she would be like a child, like a 11-year-old standing next to him. If you really think about it, she was tiny, and he's just so tall and big, you know.
And when Matthew Farwell came in, I know that you were there. The aunt, Sandra Birchmore's aunt, was there. Did he look at you, the family and friends, the supporters of Sandra? Did he glance at you at all in the court, or did he just kind of ignore the friends and family of Sandra Birchmore?
I missed him walking through the actual door, so I didn't see him till he was mostly in, like, by the desk. But from the other people I was with, they said he scanned the room, and he did look in our direction. The rest of the family was to our right, so they were a little further over, so he might not have been able to see all of them, but he did see our group there. So that kind of made me feel good. So he knew that, Sandra had a presence and people in the courtroom for her,
Definitely.
People who were going to stand up for Sandra.
And the feds have taken off, the federal prosecutors have taken off the death penalty off the table, apparently. Do you know why? And how does the family feel about that?
It was taken off the table because Maine Justice A.G. Bondi decided not to go for the death penalty. But there are some family members who wanted it and some family members who, for their beliefs, didn't want it. So I think they just want to make sure now for going forward that he gets convicted and gets life in prison.
I wonder why it was taken off the table.
I don't know. I really don't know. But now it's just going forward. This case is going to be moving really fast. I mean, he has another hearing next Friday on the 6th. And, like, there's going to be hearings, like, every month, at least one hearing every month till he gets tried in October. So I know people have been disappointed at how slow this case has been moving, but now it's really going to pick up.
So October this year is when the trial's expected.
Yeah, October 5th.
Wow. So that it is moving along. It has taken a while, but now it's going to actually happen this year, which is good. You also were doing an upcoming standout on this, right? Show us more.
Sunday is the 5-year anniversary of Sandra's death. We were going to do a standout that day, but because of the storm, we moved it to the following weekend. So if anybody wants to come join us, we'll be at the Canton Police Department from 1 to 3 p.m. on February 7th. We have extra signs where you can make your own sign. Just come and you can come learn more about Sandra's case from all the surrogates who will be there for her too.
Now, there's also a police officer named Robert Devine, who's, you know, basically was the one who led this police explorers program in Stoughton, where Matthew Farwell, you know, it seems met Sandra Birchmore. She was part of this explorers program. He recently lost his license, a certification with the Post Commission to be a law enforcement officer. He's appealing it. What do you think about that?
I figured he would appeal, but I don't see him getting his license back. They were very strong in what their wording to him was in their report. So he can appeal it, but I don't have any doubts that he'll get his, you know, he's not going to get his license back. I think that Post Commission made themselves very clear on their feelings of how they felt about Robert Devine and how his actions have been, you know, throughout the years, not just concerning Sandra, other issues that, you know, were talked about in his hearing. So I don't see him getting his license back.
Now, he's also an attorney. Is there any thought that he may lose his attorney license as well?
We haven't heard anything yet. We're not sure. I would assume they're, you know, paying close attention to it. But we haven't heard anything yet.
You would think so.
You would hope.
You would hope. You know? A lot of this is covered for people that don't know in the Howie Carr Mass Corruption book. Excellent book people can get on Amazon. It covers Karen Reed, but it also covers Sandra Birchmore. I want to ask you, are there any other movies or documentaries or books that have come out beyond Howie's book on Sandra Birchmore?
Not any documentaries yet. Dateline did an episode of her, and there is a couple podcasts. You know, the Case podcast is probably the most well-known podcast. It covers especially the early times of the case, and also goes into the explorers more in depth of, you know, this Sandra's not the only child that's been abused in the explorers throughout the country. And that's so concerning that police officers are the ones who are abusing these children, you know, because it is the police explorers group. And, you know, it's affiliated with the Boy Scouts, and a lot of people don't know that either. So I recommend people listen to that if they want to, you know, do a quick deep dive into the case, you know, it goes to the very beginning of the case. And, you know, then the trial part hasn't been covered in it yet. I don't know if they're going to do, another episode or anything like that for that.
That's interesting about the Boy Scouts being tied in with the Explorers program. I didn't realize that they were connected. They've also, Boy Scouts have also had their own scandals around children as well.
Yes, they have. So it's, you know, when I found that out, I was like, oh, this kind of makes a little bit of sense. You know, to me, it seems like they're not providing enough oversight over the program, you know, either program, but, you know, when you talk about the Police Explorers program, it's kind of like they just give them the program and it's affiliated with them. But, you know, where is the oversight on, the, you know, through the Boy Scouts or even, you know, get into it, the town and the higher ups in the police station. But you got to look at it. Sanders' case, Robert Devine was the deputy chief in Stoughton. So it ends up being he, you know, he was the one. It's like the fox guard in the hen house, you know, he's the head, you know, head honcho. And he's the one who participated in, you know, the abuse of Sandra. So there's a whole big cycle, you know.
Yes, no doubt. Well, speaking of Mizzy, she's a advocate for Sandra Birchmore, who was killed allegedly by a police officer named Matthew Farwell, who was also, you know, had some relations, we'll say, with Sandra in the past. We're talking about the Police Explorers program in Stoughton and a federal case that is happening in Boston. I want to keep you over for the next break. Do you have time, Mizzy, to stick around for another segment here?
Yeah, sure.
All right. This is Mizzy. This is Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley. We'll be right back.
More of the Grace Curley Show up next. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, folks. It's Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley today. We have Mizzy on the phone. She's an advocate for Sandra Birchmore and Matthew Farwell, a former Stoughton police officer, is up on federal charges, looking at a federal trial for the murder of Sandra Birchmore and her unborn child. We're speaking to Mizzy. Mizzy, I wanted to ask you about DA Michael Morrissey, who was recently announced he's not running for re-election. So I'd like to know what you feel about that. But I'd also like to ask you what you feel about his statement that Juna Perkins, one of the candidates for DA, made about Mr. Morrissey. Mr. Morrissey apparently was still claiming that he believes that Sandra committed suicide and was not murdered just a few months back at a Quincy Dems meeting. What do you think about Morrissey's statement and the fact he's not running for re-election?
I am so happy he's not running. I think he did the, you know, Canton alone and, you know, Norfolk County a favor and getting, he's leaving. It's the best outcome that could be happening for that county, and justice, you know, there's a, you know, big cases like, you know, Karen and Sandra's case that just his actions in both cases are so questionable. And the fact that he still is calling it a suicide after this man is already been, you know, arrested for this crime. Yes, he hasn't fully gone to trial yet, but, you know, for him to keep saying it's a suicide, I find utterly ridiculous. We have two pathologists who agree that it was a homicide. And he just, for him to keep calling it a suicide, just, it angers me. And it's also, to me, it's going to be a big problem in this case. It's going to be one of the obstacles that the prosecution is going to have trying Matthew Farwell, because they're still saying this. That's one of the things that his defense brought up was that the Norfolk DA's office is still calling it a suicide, that the Massachusetts medical examiner is still calling it a suicide. These are obstacles that the prosecution are going to have to overcome in trying Matthew Farwell.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of obstacles there. One of the things I want to bring up as well is what we were talking about earlier, the Police Explorers programs, because those do exist all over the country, all over New England, where people are listening. If a local school is considering an Explorers program, what would your advice to them be, or even to parents out there, about Explorers programs and even, you know, teachers and coaches and things like that? Because I think, you know, obviously Sandra was hoping to get something positive out of this. And oftentimes that's what kids or their parents are looking for with their kids. And then bad things happen. So what kind of things should parents or guardians or other school teachers maybe consider with these programs, and kind of how to safeguard kids in these situations?
Yeah, I know that life is tough, and you know, we have such busy schedules in our day-to-day lives, but when you send your child into a program, or you know, whether it be sporting or like an after-school program, just please make sure you're present. Sandra's mom sent her child to where she thought it was the safest place to be around these officers. You know, what parent would think that, you know, an officer would groom their child? But that's what happened in this, you know, circumstance. So if just being a little more present and also talking to your children, teaching them about grooming, you know, you don't have to talk to them like they're adults, but let them know that, you know, certain touches are wrong, you know, certain phrases, if your teacher or your coach is saying these kind of things, it's not right, and please come to me. People just need to understand, and I hope they learn from Sandra's case, that this does happen, you know, with obviously these police officers, but coaches and teachers and, you know, people who are present in your child's life who are mentors, and they just need to pay attention a little more. I know life is busy, but you have to pay attention and be present just so your child knows that you're there, but also that person who is overseeing your child knows you're going to be around, so they don't find these little spaces to, you know, insert themselves into your child's life in a grooming sense.
I think that's a great point, Mizzy, because oftentimes I think these groomers, they look for the kids that don't have a parent that's paying attention or around or, you know, involved, whether it's, you know, priests, that's another one, that, or Boy Scout leaders, like we mentioned earlier. There's a lot of that that's been documented in the past, and this is kind of a new one that we're all becoming familiar with, these police explorer programs, where you think your kids are, where else would they be safer with police? But then it turns out they're the ones that are grooming and acting as predators with some of these kids. And not in every situation, but it's something definitely to be alert of, and to be involved, to make sure that you know what's going on with your kids.
Exactly.
We have a few seconds here. Any final words that you want to leave with us, or even maybe promote your standout again? Anything you want to leave before we let you go today, Mizzy?
Yeah, I just want everybody to think of Sandra on Sunday. You know, it is the 5-year anniversary of her death. And if anybody wants to come out to our standout, it'll be on February 7th, 1 to 3 p.m. at the Canton Police Department.
Perfect. That is Mizzy. She's a family friend, a family supporter of Sandra Birchmore. I want to thank you so much for being here, Mizzy. This is Mike Crawford. This is The Grace Curley Show. Welcome back. Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley today. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Taylor, what is our poll question today, and what are the results?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is will Sunday's nor'easter be a bust? We'll maybe get a few inches, but nothing major, or it'll rival last week's snowfall.
And it looks like it's not going to be major, because I'm looking at the weather on Boston 25, and they're saying just a coating to a couple inches, right?
Hopefully. So.
I'm hoping. Me too.
93% feel the same way.
Good. Good. I feel like the people know what they're talking about right now. And we're all got our fingers crossed, because I don't think we can deal with much more. Like we talked about earlier, the roofs and the decks and the trees and the dogs. A lot of the dogs don't want to go out right now. It's too cold, too much snow. So hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully it just goes right out to sea and we don't have to deal with it at all. We have another great guest on the phone. We are not related, but we have the same last name, even though we are like distant cousins, I believe. I'm not sure. I like this next guest. He's somebody I've known for quite a while. He does a lot of good work in the city of Boston. He's a well-known activist, community advocate, does a lot of volunteer time, feeds the hood. He's all about feeding the hood. You got to love that. He does a lot of volunteer work, but he also gives a lot of news and advocacy. When Boston City Councilor Ed Flynn was on the show earlier, he mentioned just a recent, you know, forum that he was a part of, and Jamal was one of the moderators of it. He led that forum, and it was about police accountability. He's also someone who's done quite a bit of coverage reporting about Monica Cannon Grant on what's going on in the city of Boston and with what's going on with Monica Cannon Grant. So welcome to the Grace Curley Show, Jamal Crawford. How you doing today, Jamal?
Doing very well. And yes, give thanks for anybody that is confused. Jamal Crawford, Mike Crawford. We might need to get Skip Gates to do the lineage to figure it out. But I'm sure if there is any connection between the family names, it will be quite complicated.
It'd be quite complicated. Yeah, definitely, for sure. Are you Irish as well? Because that's where my family's from, Ireland. I always wonder about that. Is Jamal part Irish?
Not to my knowledge, although I do like a nice rye.
There you go. You never know. You never know. But Jamal, the reason I have you here today, it's not to talk about our last name or our family lineage. It's about Monica Cannon Grant. This is a Black Lives Matter activist that we both know. We've both had personal experiences with Monica over the years. And it's kind of tragic what happened. But I feel like she got this great deal. And I'm kind of disappointed with the feds on this, because they had her. This woman did some crimes. There's no doubt about it. She took a plea deal. She's an activist. She took a bunch of money, didn't do what she was supposed to do with the money, both from the city of Boston as well as the DA's office. She also did unemployment fraud and pandemic fraud. She was caught with a bunch of fraud. She was looking at decades in jail. And the feds offered her the sweet deal where she could plead guilty to everything. And they were suggesting a year and a half to 2 years in prison, federal prison, which I thought was a really good deal for her. But then the judge decided to give her no prison time and said, you know what, we're just going to confine you to 6 months home detention, which I think is just the biggest slap on the wrist I've ever seen. It seems like crime does pay if you're Monica Cannon Grant. What do you think about all this, Jamal?
So, first of all, I think that overall, you know, myself and many others, just don't think that, you know, to the old adage, make the punishment fit the crime. I don't think that it met that, you know, basic threshold. And when we look at other things that have been, you know, covered largely by people such as Howie Carr and others, and, you know, and Howie Carr and I are not in agreement all the time, right? Very seldom are we in agreement. But there are certain cases that present, you know, indisputable truths. And so at some point, this has to be recognized, you know, at least for me, you know, what it actually was at its core. And I don't think that that got addressed. And I don't think it got addressed or that the punishment fit the overall crimes, plus the no admission of guilt. Well, that might have happened in court. But previous to that and everything online was a person who was very, you know, thumbing their nose at any semblance of justice, promised to take down other people who dare say that she was doing anything incorrect. And this was all a scheme to take down a powerful black woman. And I think that a lot of that stuff is just very dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were one of the first people questioning Monica Cannon Grant, even before the charges. You were one of her fiercest critics. You took a lot of heat for that for a long time. You even helped me out with some of the stuff with Monica at one point. Are you afraid now? Because she's going to be kind of free. You know, she's going to be out there again. Are you worried about what it's going to be like with having Monica Cannon Grant free to just kind of get back into activism and collecting money from people? What do you think?
Well, during, you know, her, you know, heyday, if you will, I was subjected to, I believe what I've said online is at least 8 different threats, some of which were physical, you know, we're going to beat you up, or if we ever catch you here or there, some of which were more serious, you know, serious, they thought were serious, you know, with physical violence that might involve a weapon or something. So am I afraid? No. Why would I be? I take people and their cheering squads for what it is. It's a bunch of online talk and a lot of people who would jump out the window or say that they would jump out the window for a cause such as this often don't even know what it is that they are so, you know, adamantly protecting in their mind. So, yeah, no, I'm not concerned at all. It's sad. There were a bunch of people duped. I was one of the early ones to try to put people in the right direction to say, and this is kind of one of my things. When it comes to, let's say, right-wing or conservative media or, you know, what many in my community, the Herald or Howie Carr or what have you, the thing is that when people are projected to be working in, you know, the furtherance of black salvation, it does none of us any good when this type of, you know, fraud, whether it's at the local level from like Monica Cannon Grant or what we've seen at the national level from like a Black Lives Matter. This is not the crux of what most of us in communities of color do every day to do just the regular unsexy work that it takes to try to help people around you. What a novel idea.
I know. Are you disappointed by some of the local leaders and even the press, like the Globe, the Boston Celtics, Mayor Wu, you know, a lot of these big time names that supported Monica Cannon Grant, but didn't really support what you were doing, which I felt like was the real thing, and didn't take any responsibility when it went bad with Monica Cannon Grant? The Boston Globe almost didn't cover this at all. Do you have anything to say to them?
Well, I do think it's unfortunate. Well, first of all, and part of the thing that when I went about exposing, you know, what I saw as a very clear fraud, I don't like when anybody is duped. And all of those people individually, politicians, elected officials, organizations, larger organizations like the Celtics, the Bruins, and so on, corporations, so on and so forth, they were taken advantage of. And it's no different than if you get off at the bus stop in Times Square and you think you could beat the Three Monty guy. So, you know, I'm just here to tell you that you can never win that. And just go on and go have your experience. But for a lot of, unfortunately, all of the, you know, things that I mentioned, and particularly the white community at large, because a lot of the white community at that particular time, really kind of had their heart in the right place. I'm going to say it was like a save the dolphins or save the whales type of moment at that time, what have you. And they were really trying to do something and donate to a cause that they saw was fit. And then here comes, in my opinion, a two-bit fraudster that leads them astray. And what that does for all the other organizations who are really trying to do something, it diminishes that. And for all the well-meaning white people who live in Newton and Wellesley and all this type of stuff and all the liberals and everything that everybody has been castigating, they tried to do a good thing. They were just led astray and run amok by, you know, in my opinion, you know, a two-bit hustler, because it wasn't even a good hustle. It was very base.
It kind of, yeah.
And people fell for that.
It kind of taints the pool too. I mean, I felt like I fell for it for a while too, until I started talking to you about it. And so I want to thank you, Jamal Crawford, specifically on this. We are going to take a quick break. Do you mind sticking around? Will you stick around for our last segment here?
Absolutely. I want to hear more commercials.
Yes. We're gonna make some money now, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk maybe a little more about Monica, but really what I want to talk about is Boston police accountability, because I know that you're big on that, and we'll get into that as well. This is Mike Crawford speaking to Jamal Crawford. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is Mike Crawford filling in for Grace Curley. We have Jamal Crawford on the phone. We're talking about the city of Boston, police accountability. Jamal, what is going on in the city of Boston with police accountability? Because you led this forum recently, and you've been watching with OPAT, which is the civilian review board for the police, and they're really not cooperating there. What is going on, and what is your suggestion to get some accountability with the Boston police?
Okay, so first of all, OPAT is the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency, and that is the overarching body that all these things sit in, which is the Civilian Review Board, as well as the Internal Affairs Oversight Panel. So what has been going on is, you know, much to, you know, the controversy that's been around it is that nothing's been happening, but there actually has been some things happening, and the Boston Police Department has not been cooperative in terms of responding to, you know, requests for information or showing up for hearings or and the main thing is that when they make a recommendation, whether it's the CRB or the Internal Affairs Oversight Panel, that these findings that they've made have been overturned or not adhered to by the Boston Police Department. We had the forum a couple of weeks ago at MAMLEO, which is the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officials, at Columbia Road in Seaver. We had the forum, and we had their members of OPAT and the Civilian Review Board, namely Evandro Cavallo, who is the executive director. But more actually notably, we had Boston Police Patrolmen's Association member, or not member, president, Larry Calderoni.
Wow.
And we also had Eddie Crispin, who was a member of the current POST, which is the statewide mechanism for police reform. So it was a quite engaging forum, and I think that what everybody noted is that we need more. So I think that police reform is moving in the right direction, but it does not have as much steam and gusto as we would like behind it, and it does not have the full-blood cooperation, at least what it seems currently, from the Boston Police Department. So I would like to see everybody more engaged on this, and at least having the dialogue to find out, if we don't want to move in this direction, well, what's wrong with it and how can we fix it? It's not to eliminate something, but it's how to strengthen it.
Totally. Well, we've just got a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you about Boston Mayor Wu and the Boston Police Commissioner Cox. How do you think they're doing on this?
So thus far, it seems, and Commissioner Cox, who I've spoken about, you know, on multiple occasions, is to me one of the most intellectually capable commissioners that we've had. I have a personal opinion on, you know, his past and his history and his own experience, where I expected him to be more aggressive in his appetite for police reform. That has not necessarily happened. I know that Mayor Wu, in her past as a city councilor, was one of the advocates for police reform and was very involved in everything that we have now, and when she was campaigning and all the reforms that came before in the Marty Walsh administration, that she had, you know, said that she was strengthening and everything. So I give everybody a certain degree of time, but to my satisfaction, which, you know, is probably more than most, I think that there needs to be more done for police reform, both by Commissioner Cox and Michelle Wu, and it needs to be reprioritized with city council and everybody else because of economic times. Police reform, which was one of the hot-button issues, has now decreased, and now more people are talking about, and rightfully so in many cases, the economics of rent and heating bills and utilities and everything else. So, you know, I understand.
Totally. Jamal Crawford, we're speaking to. Jamal, if people want to follow up with you, how can they follow up with you on, I think, Facebook, right? And other places? Where?
Yeah, if they find me on Facebook, that's wonderful. But I think we just revamped, because we're trying to revamp Blackstonian .org or .com, get you to the same place. We're trying to revamp that, and other than that, yeah, just Facebook. You can catch me for my regular rants. And also too, as you spoke to the food program, if there's somebody out there and you know somebody in need or something like that, try to contact me directly or contact Mike directly, and we'll try to do some service.
Thank you so much. That's Jamal Crawford. This is Mike Crawford checking out on the Grace Curley Show. Howie Ka coming up next.